Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's Tuesday, and it's Tuesday, February 26th, and you know what that means. When it's Tuesday, we're not in Belgium. We are in Yonkers, and we are with none other than Richard Narog, the co-host of the show. Good morning, Mr. Narog.
Good morning, Mr. Aris. Always a pleasure to be here. Always on a Tuesday morning from 10 to 11 a.m. with you on Blog Talk Radio, Westchester on the Level. And you're right, if it's Tuesday, it must be Belgium, which was the movie we certainly remember from our youth. However, it isn't Belgium. It's Yonkers, it's Westchester, it's New York, the country and the world, but not Belgium. Nevertheless, we can always reflect upon the fond memories of that wonderful picture. I enjoyed it. I hope you did when it came out. I won't even say how many years ago.
I know. I just try not to reflect that far back.
So we welcome our listeners. We're happy that they tune in to listen to us, certainly at this hour on Tuesdays, where you and I are together to chat about what's happening around. And those who come later by archive, we appreciate that too. Appreciate their time for our opinions and stories and education and all the other things that we do here. And how might they get in touch with us by email or by telephone if they'd like to? How do they do that?
Well, the email is really simple. It's WHYT, as in tango, WHYT editor, all one word. So WHYT editor at gmail.com. And only I read that email, so it's shared with no one else, and it is secure. And then, of course, you can call us up live during the show, and it's best done in the first hour, certainly on a Tuesday when Richard Narog is on. And the number is 347, that's the local area code, 347-205-9201. And that's it. So there's a big plate out there today, Mr. Narog. Everything seems to be happening. Did you read the article about the members of the Building and Construction Trades Council of Westchester and Putnam County having a union rally in downtown White Plains yesterday afternoon? They want the city of Yonkers to move diligently ahead rather than politically foot dragging themselves over the project where they intend to build right next to the Stu Leonard's Costco and Home Depot.
Is that the Target project you're referring to?
Yeah. So Austin Avenue is the, and they want to build there. They want to push, and they're blaming our politicians for playing a game of waiting to see how the elections go. I don't know how this will affect the elections one way or the other.
Well, you know, I think you have to put things in perspective. First of all, it's the business of the politicians, better known as servants of the people who are elected to run the daily business of government, in this case the city of Yonkers, to do best and first what's in the interest of the residents of the city of Yonkers. The fact that we might have a union rallying for jobs, well, you know, I understand why a union and its membership would rally for jobs, especially in this economy, why they would get together and, you know, push to go in that direction. But the fact of the matter is that we have to look at what's good for the people. It's not about the unions per se. It's clearly about what's good for the development of the city of Yonkers. And should it be so that that would go forward in whatever shape and form, then of course the unions that are interested may benefit from that. But we have to keep everything in perspective. And I think that's what's important, and not get carried away by, you know, the propaganda and the public relations and all the other things. So we have to look and see, just on a very simple scale, what's going on up in Austin Avenue, if that development that was promised in terms of Target is coming. Is Target actually coming? What may be holding it up? Do we need a Target here? Is Target part of some agreement? There's so many things that go into it besides just a ribbon cutting and a headline and you know, some press releases. So I think, you know, people have to start to get a little serious and not just talk lightly and glibly about these things. And if everything is laid out, you know, in front of you and on the table and it makes sense, then you go forward and things tend to naturally fall into place. So, you know, politics, you know, that's an interesting term, and I guess it could be thrown about by any and all factions involved. What say you?
Well, I first of all am taken aback by what you said, because I agree with what you say, and I'm taken aback by the concept that what happens with economic development and with other news events is that there is so much public relations work here, and it is so difficult to disseminate that concept that's employed in the media by these specialists who are PR experts, who are experts in human behavior patterns and responses to certain words, or certain elements, or certain actions, and they throw that through the media, and I guess the media is very much unsuspecting, so they become complicit, almost enabling these concepts to come about. You know, in the article that was written in today's paper, unfortunately, they don't mention the fact that nobody really fully comprehends what the project is. The people who promoted that there would be no changes to zoning ever are the same lawyers that said the last place we'll ever do any project of a certain size where we do change the zoning will be Ridge Hill. Well, that was Al Del Bello's firm that did that. And it precluded that the area of Austin Avenue be changed through zoning because it fell under the size that was required. There were only two places in all of Yonkers that fit the description that Al Del Bello demanded, and that was Empire City Casino and Ridge Hill. Nothing else was large enough to qualify. Now Al Del Bello represents Austin Avenue Project. All of a sudden, he wants the zoning law to change. So once you begin the process, isn't it a slippery slope? That's exactly what Mr. Larkin said, and I agree with him.
Well, you know, you go back to just a few minutes ago when you opened up with your comments that what people need, and I think people want and look for, is a credible source. And you were talking about the PR and the headlines, that's all we seem to get, the media relations, when in fact people would like to say, where can we get the facts? Where can we get the real deal? Who will tell us the truth? Now, you would normally assume that the truth would come out of City Hall. Mm. The real deal, if you will, would come out of City Hall through department's head commissioners generally, who would get out and speak on the issues, or that you would get through even the public relations department of City Hall, the information that you can get from the commissioners again, or that the mayor would authorize and say, look, put out this background and history on the project and give the people the information so they can have as much of it as possible, so they can be kept informed. Again, we never seem to get the guts. We never seem to get the substance, and people don't know who to listen to and where to go. And then, of course, you don't get all the information, sometimes just the surface. It's incorrect, it starts to spread, and before you know it, we have great confusion, little trust, and little credibility, and that's the problem. So how do we correct that? How do we look to that to make it better? And let me just say, because we're at Austin Avenue, we're on business development and economic development, I just want to kind of sort of fly across the thruway there to Ridge Hill for 1 second and give a shout-out to one of the newer businesses that has just opened this week. One you're familiar with because you interviewed the manager, and that's the Bonefish Restaurant.
Oh,
I was there the other night, being taken there and celebrating an occasion or two, and it was the most delightful experience, just the most delightful experience in terms of the management, the staff, the greeter, the waiting staff, the service, the food. It was just fantastic, and I highly recommend that people take the opportunity to avail themselves of the Bonefish Grill. Just a wonderful, wonderful experience, one of the nicest things, I think, that has happened in our city, and in Ridge Hill in particular, and conveniently sits right across from the Whole Foods Market there at the what would be the southern end of Ridge Hill. convenient to parking, which is right across the street because the garage is right next to Whole Foods as well. And it's just right on the corner. But the thing is, the atmosphere and the sense of warmth and comfort, it's like going into someone's home. They just couldn't be nicer. The service was quick. I mean, I just can't say enough good things about it. They've really outdone themselves. But again, anyone familiar with Bonefish, as I know you are, Hezzy, and myself, know there are certain standards and benchmarks, and they have met and I think exceeded it in their opening here at Ridge Hill in the city of Yonkers.
Well, you know what, Rich? I don't know if you realize that, but your endorsement of the whole demeanor and the cuisine and the service of the Bonefish Grill is going to cause an avalanche of people running to the place.
It should only be so. It would be very nice if it should happen. Then God bless both Bonefish and all the people who go, because I think it would be a wonderful marriage and a wonderful experience in terms of everyone's taste buds, certainly. But it's just an experience. If you've never experienced the Bonefish Grill, if never been to one, which are popular in the South, we have one north, I think, in Poughkeepsie. It might be the closest one. They are opening other ones in the near future on the island. I think one they're trying to bring to New York City as well. But yeah, it's an experience. It really and truly is an experience and a delightful one. So, again, if they're in the Ridge Hill neighborhood, and even if they're not, they're going up the Thruway, stop off. I think they start around 4 o'clock in the afternoon for dinner, and a little earlier on the weekend. But go enjoy yourselves. You'll have a great time. And tell them that Hezzy and Rich sent you from Westchester on the Level.
That would be cool, too. Well, you know, I hope they're ready. Their staff is definitely ready for all the plugs to show up.
Well, thank God they open at 4 o'clock because people will start lining up. In the next hour, there'll be a line out the door, according to you anyway. So I believe that if you say it, it must be true.
Well, we'll have to see. You know,
well, let's take us back across the Thruway to Austin Avenue when you were talking about former councilman, former mayor, former county executive, former lieutenant governor Al Del Bello, now a representative of many of the economic development interests in the city of Yonkers.
You know what concerns me all the time? You know, there's got to be a value to creating a new imprint. So let's say it is a Target or another store. The question becomes in my mind, how much money is the city going to make off of this? And the second aspect of it is it really necessary to have that type of store, or is there a better way of moving forward?
Exactly, and that's what the whole issue is about. That's really what needs to be concentrated on and addressed. And you have to take it from the perspective, who benefits? Well, if the servants of the people, also known as our elected politicians, understand that, then it kind of makes the job a little easier, because who benefits should be the people of Yonkers, and how should they benefit? Well, they should benefit by induced development or natural development. They should benefit by opportunities in various types of resale and wholesale. They should benefit by the tax base that increases and lessens, hopefully, their residential and property burdens. I mean, how do the people of Yonkers benefit by this? Do we give more than we get? Is it an even up this situation, or do we get more in the long run because this happens here?
Well, that's a big question. You probably remember the Morris brothers. These are the people who had the parcel of land on which Stu Leonard's Costco and Home Depot built their phenomenal properties, and they are the best producing properties certainly in the region. Certainly, Stu Leonard's Yonkers store is doing better than any other store that they have. Costco is doing well. Home Depot is doing well. But guess what? We're only getting $380,000 a year from all three properties in revenue. Now, they're going to tell you that at the same time, well, we had to go there because this was the first we've ever done. In the meantime, the Morris brothers are in arrears and paying the city money. They owe the city money. These people are not legitimate people with whom to work if they don't pay the city what they owe them. And yet they seem to have enough money to pay lawyers to represent them, but we still haven't gotten our money. And when they say it's a $115 million deal, how much of that is taxpayer money? Do these people put up anything? Is this going to be all one inducement after the other from the IDA? And why do they say that Target is considering a location at the site? How come we don't know if they're doing it? You know, any time they build a project in New York City, they have a tenant. We don't have a tenant. How can we build when we don't even know who the tenant is?
Well, they may well be looking for financial inducements. And again, that comes off the backs of the resident taxpayers. Let's face it, pilot agreements, mortgage, construction, sales tax exemptions, and all these other wonderful things, as if we have to bribe them to come in to such an active hill there with a great natural audience of people who come day in and day out, 7 days a week, no matter when you go. They're in Home Depot, they're in Costco, they're up at the top of the hill at Stu Leonard's. You have to be kidding me. People should be banging the door down saying, here, I'll give you X amount of dollars to come in here.
Well, why is that we don't have that sort of attitude? I walk around not with thinking I'm more than anyone else, but certainly I have enough self-respect to say, hey, this is Yonkers. We got what's going on, so you can pay your way to get in.
Well, it's an attitude, as you said, and you know, people have to understand who are in office what it's about. I mean, you know, it's the approach to these matters. You have to look at past history and how all this was rolled out and how it continues to roll out, and what's people in what their involvement has been and how they proceed on these issues. I mean, it's the position you take, and we're only talking about a fair position. You represent the city of Yonkers, you know what I'm saying? Whether you are the elected mayor, the elected council president, or one of the elected council members, or you work for the executive branch as a commissioner, and, you know, you have the wherewithal to follow in the executive branch, the mayor's footsteps, in dealing with these situations. To be fair, but to be good for the residents of the city of Yonkers. We're not in the, you know, people misunderstand, I think sometimes the politicians work in the interest of developers, they work in the interest of lawyers, they work in the interest of unions. That's not what it's about. This is what we've come to after the last 20 or 25 years here, certainly in the city of Yonkers. I think we're missing the boat on the whole issue. All those things are fine, all those things are part of the mix, and all those things will come to the fore. But they will come in good time, in the natural way of doing things, not by these economic development, you know, backroom deals that then get a ribbon-cutting headline, and then you find out soon enough that, it's a screwed-up arrangement. That's not to the benefit of the citizens and the residents of the city and the taxpayers.
Well, it's so interesting that the union membership should come out and end up, having a demonstration on Monday when you don't hear from anybody else. We certainly didn't hear from them all along. Why are they so quiet all along? And why all of a sudden are they allowing themselves to be used by Al Del Bello and the PR firm that's pushing this thing?
Well, this is sort of a quiet practice that, you know, you see from time to time where they try to put pressure, again, on those who are making decisions who think they will crack and weaken over the fact that, you know, the unions will come out and the unions are voters, and the unions have money, and the unions won't support you, and you'll be considered anti-union and anti-labor, and they make a big fuss to rattle people's cages. But that's not what it's about. That should not never be the way it is. You know, if you have a good project, things will take its course.
Well, whatever project you build in Austin Avenue, in that parcel, unions, tradespeople will be involved.
Right. Well, I think what you're saying and what we're hearing is that they're trying to push an issue forward regardless of what needs to be addressed, simply for the fact because they want the work. But that's
why is what
that's the cart before the horse.
Well, all I ever find in the last 12 years, 13 years I've been watching Yonkers, it seems that they only demonstrate over Yonkers projects, as if the rest of the county doesn't exist. And I don't see them demonstrating for a job to be done in Bronxville. I don't see them demonstrating in Yorktown Heights or in Yorktown or anywhere else. How come they're demonstrating over Yonkers? What is it that everybody feels they can grab a piece of meat from the city of Yonkers and get away with it, and they do? And that's what I don't understand. What, have they got nothing else to do in the whole county? Is the county dead? Are they only coming in to rip Yonkers to shreds? And what are they leaving behind?
Why are they gathering in White Plains for a Yonkers project?
Have no clue, because it's all for PR. Maybe, you know why? Because it's probably easier for them to get to White Plains because none of them live in Yonkers.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
It is interesting. That's the way it's been in the past. We don't employ our own people. And we don't incorporate that into the contracts. And I'm not saying you incorporate people that don't have the expertise, but put in a contract that if there are people who are qualified for the job in Yonkers, they go first. What's the problem? It's done everywhere else.
Well,
I don't understand that.
Another issue.
Well, what are we going to do? So what else is your pleasure?
Well, you know, let me tell you, what I found interesting was a fire that was announced that happened, I believe, yesterday.
Yeah, last
and
night.
Are you familiar with it?
No, I only heard that it was a fire, but I didn't follow it up.
Well, there was a fire, and as I'm reading about where the fire was and trying to ascertain the location, because I'm saying the writer clearly doesn't have a handle on either the clear location of this fire or ownership of the property. And I start to work myself backwards in figuring it out when they start to tell me that, well, it was on Odell Avenue, it was on the north side. Now, Odell's goes up the hill from one end, from Nepperhan down the other end to Warburton. So then they said, oh, they closed Warburton and also North Broadway. I said, aha. And I'm starting to sense now where this is. Then when they said it was very difficult to get to the two-story, basically stone building because of narrow cobblestones and so forth, and they really basically had to let the building burn, I said, I know exactly where this is. And sure enough, then I found photos. And I said, lo and behold, what is it but part of the old Elizabeth Seton College property, the rear property that housed the nuns and the convent.
It's funny because actually I got started thinking about it too, and I just couldn't place it. I was confused by the address because I had never seen that property, that part of the property.
Because you wouldn't. It's well hidden.
Uh-huh.
For those who know Yonkers, whether you're coming up from Warburton or down from North Broadway where St. John's Riverside Hospital is, as you go down the hill in particular, and then you bear right, and there's a long stretch down. We almost come to a full stop before you can make a left. There are two stone columns, and if you go up that driveway, that's all part of the old Elizabeth Seton College property. And the question is, who owns that property now? Who's been taking care of that property? Might it be the city of Yonkers? Might that still be a remnant from the properties above on North Broadway, where Alder Manor went to the Irish Association and the former school is a public school, Yonkers Public Schools, and then that corner vacant piece is being preserved. Who still owns that property? And how did it get to such a stage that would even burn? Who's been watching it? Who's been responsible for it? Who's accountable for that? Do they even know they have it or who has it? You could see the graffiti, what was left on the garage doors and the walls. Mind you, this is a beautiful stone building, former convent. It was a beautiful place. Now it's burnt out. And apparently this was the second fire there from one a year ago. I just find it disgraceful. I mean, hasn't anybody a clue what's going on? Or do we have to have these kind of things happen and then you don't even have the news reporter who realized where it was and what it was all about? and we just kind of pass it by and go over it like it's no big deal and nobody has a clue. These were beautiful buildings, beautiful buildings. This was, set off. It was so rustic. I mean, you wouldn't even know you were in the city of Yonkers. And I remember clearly the condition it was in when the city had it. So what happened?
Well, that's really been the, I guess that's where people get deflated. I had heard today, even though I've been reading it on the website, but I didn't know what people were referring to. And because we don't have access to the people who submit their anonymous statements, I have no way of reaching back to them. So people have been saying that there's a gag order, and I'm saying, what are they talking about? And I never understood. And it turns out I now hear that there is a gag order. No one's supposed to talk to the press, particularly the Yonkers Tribune. And it just continues and continues, where the administration is evidently so uncomfortable about being questioned on any issue, and they don't want to be asked these questions because they have no answer. And quite often, which is really pathetic, there was a situation only yesterday where I found the administration having a spokesperson tell me one thing, and I had to call back an hour later to say, sorry, but what you're telling me is not the truth. And that was because they were lied to.
Truth, yeah. Credibility, communication. These should be simple. This is why people lose faith. This is why people, tend to walk away. Don't vote in elections. Look for only small favors instead of the big picture, which is, the proper running of government. This is a horrible way to operate. That's what brings you. You want to talk about the incident, by the way, that brought that on? Because that's important, too.
What are you referring to?
To the former acting commissioner of Department of Parks, recently moved over to deputy commissioner of DPW.
Yeah, that was really an embarrassment. It turned out that last week, if you remember, there was a comptroller, DiNapoli, came into the city, and he gave us a fiscal profile of the city. And prior to him arriving, I had learned that there was a $300,000 figure of, unaccountable monies that should have been collected for permits that were dispersed through the Department of Parks and Recreation and Conservation in the city of Yonkers. So I had learned about it. I waited for everybody to leave the mayor's conference room after they had all the media there took a personal question and answer period with the mayor. And my back was killing me, so I literally motioned to the mayor, if he would, to sit down next to me. And I told him that I'd heard that there was $300,000 missing from the coffers from permit fees that weren't collected, as I understood it. And he first said to me, well, are you talking about $300,000 in total fees, or are you talking about the difference between the fees that should have been collected and the new increased rates? I said, no, we're talking about the full amount. So he was like in shock, or so I thought. I thought he was in shock. And then it turns out that he would look into it. That same night, there was a meeting of the Parks and Recreation and Conservation Department, and they had a meeting at their offices, which I couldn't get to. And it turns out that the new
commissioner,
Yvette Hartsfield,
the new commissioner,
she said that the amount was $600,000. Well, $600,000, that was it. Then it turns out that yesterday we found out that Mr. Berardo, who was at one time the acting commissioner after Augie Cambria left, which was 2 years ago, he left the last year that Amicone was there. So he left the year before Amicone exited, and he was there also a year into this administration, their first year in office. And it was in that time period that, certainly in the last year, that the $600,000 in permit fees were missing. So when I checked, I found out that he was no longer working for the city. When I checked with the city, they said, oh, no, he's here. We've had a reorganization, and he's still here. Well, that turned out to be a lie. Turned out they had a reorganization, whatever that is, or they didn't want to talk about it, but it turned out he was offered another job at a lower rate, and he decided to leave. Now, what was so difficult about simply saying the man left?
Because you might connect the dots with what the story is that you just told. And a reorganization is a political euphemism for we made him an offer he couldn't refuse. We moved him from one place to another, and then we offered him a lower title and position for less money. And he was either going to stay and would make that rough on him, or he'd decide to retire or move on. And guess what he decided to do? Took the hit and left.
Correct. And you know what's interesting, and this is the thing that really is the most, discouraging for me. I believed that the administration, when I told the mayor himself to look into it, would do it. Instead, he not only wants to cover up that part, but he also wants to cover up the fact that it's now $600,000, and he also wants to cover up the fact that the man is no longer in office or left. And the point is, why would you do that if you can't even get your ducks in a row? Why didn't he tell the commissioner to not tell the truth? And what's going on with all this game?
How is this miraculously discovered? First of all, how did it even went on over this year or two period for such a great amount of money, which certainly isn't collected by any commissioners? How is this just miraculously found out now? How is it no one knew, and who brought this to the fore? I mean, the person who they just imported from Florida certainly couldn't have found it on her own. And Mr. Sansone was the deputy. He was with the bid, so he couldn't have found it. So how did this all come about? And if this was a case, if it was, and I don't know, and you don't know, it's alleged that, you know, something went on. So the fact of the matter is, wouldn't you question the person in charge? And if you found them to be, you know, sort of negligent in the fact that it wasn't done, under their watch, then you would act accordingly. And move it and say so in such a way that will let people know that that person is no longer going to be employed by the city of Yonkers. But the way it's done is terrible.
Well, it is terrible, and it puts into question, this isn't the only person that was let go with no notice. And if you remember Manny Inamorato, who worked at MIS, there were issues with regard to him. We don't know what those issues were. Supposedly it had something to do with email and the mayor. It turns out he left in November without a word. Without a word. So the man was kicked in the rear, and there was never any accusation of any form ever brought forward to the public. And it was just left to be forgotten.
Well, you know, some people, for whatever the reason, again, we don't know the particulars, see the handwriting on the wall, and if they still need to work and cannot retire, they will themselves resign, which makes it easier on the executive branch, you know, on City Hall, so to speak, and on themselves to seek gainful employment elsewhere. And I understand that Mr. Morato is gainfully employed somewhere in the boundaries of the city of New York, and similar, okay, if not a better paying situation. But then again, that doesn't mean that where he's employed knows what the situation is from the city of Yonkers. So everyone likes to go away quietly and happily.
Well, I don't begrudge them moving ahead, anybody, but I'm more than disheartened. I'm really just, I've collapsed over this goes on here. The truth is never told. It's always a cover-up, and the accusations are never realized, and people are so scared they can't even speak for themselves. It wouldn't be the first time human resources gets rid of people, and they don't do such a great job of it. In the meantime, the person who's in charge of human resources, Paula Red Zeman, she hasn't been coming to work. She doesn't show up. She doesn't come from Connecticut to Yonkers where she's supposed to. I know that the administration spoke to her about it. Now she's telling us that she's sick. Oh, the poor thing is sick. And now she's walking around with a cane, whatever that is. Who cares? You know, point is, she's so sick and she can't come into Yonkers to work, then maybe she should take a leave of absence. And she's a real troublemaker. She's fired a lot of people, and nobody knows what the reasons are. And you know what? She's another one of these black-on-black violence, abusive people who, because there's a woman particularly who's prettier or smarter, God forbid, you're just about ready to lose your job. Just because Paula Red Zeman can't handle a prettier woman or, God forbid, a smarter one. And especially, God forbid, if you're black. So, you know, I don't know what to tell you. I'm just flabbergasted that these are the type of people we have. They're no good. And they don't even live in Yonkers. What's the point of that, tell me?
I know. It's the beauty of it all. It's really a Yonkers administration. I don't know what that means anymore.
I think it means nothing. It's not right. It's not right. And I don't know what the public can do about it, because the public is outmaneuvered at every turn. They don't know who to trust. They can't trust the administration because the administration is lying. They can't trust media because they're spinning.
Mm-hmm.
And so where do you go? Where do you go? And it's not a problem just in Yonkers. It's a worldwide problem. And we've turned media into a circus event of controlling the public and whoever.
It used to be, whether it was the local or national level, when you had a question, you asked the person you hired, meaning the politician you elected, to answer those questions straightforward, whether it was the president at a press conference, a governor, a senator, a mayor. What gives? Everybody now has the wall of the press in front of them. You know, when do we have to hire people to speak for us? I mean, there are times when the person in the highest office should be speaking to their constituents and to their audience. Who wants to hear from these other people? Let them write away and, you know, get out the bulk of the story in print or in emails or whatever it is, the media they choose. But when you want to go to the horse's mouth. What's wrong with that? Can't the horse speak anymore? Was the horse's mouth turning into the horse's ass?
That's a good question. Also, you remember the other situation that happened also on the weekend? It turned out the guy who ran as a Democrat for the first city council district against Chris Johnson, who ended up losing, evidently he was outmaneuvered by the Democratic Party. Didn't realize he was one of the roadkill operations of the party, because evidently Chris Johnson got a lot of political juice to back him up, particularly through Zimmer Brandon and Andrea Stewart Cousins, for whom Chris Johnson worked. Despite the fact that people looked at his challenger, Mark Hines, who happens to be in the security business, for some crazy reason, this guy was locked out of his apartment, and he shot the door frame with 8 bullets, 8 rounds. Is he out of his mind? And the best part of all is when he came before the court yesterday, they decided not to, they didn't give him bail, that's for sure, and they're going to arraign him today. But they also found that he had other guns in his apartment. So why would someone be so crazy to shoot up the door when he would have known the cops would have had to show up? Wouldn't they have found all that contraband in his apartment?
Well, first of all, I don't know if it's contraband. You said he's in the security business, so maybe he's licensed to carry whatever he's carrying. Let's hope he is, and whatever he has in his apartment is also licensed. The question is, why did he do what he did?
And why did it take the cops so long to bring out who he was? Because we were the first ones with his name, and yet there was uncertainty whether he would even be arrested. What kind of game are they playing at the police department? Either get arrested, you don't get arrested. There's a file on you or there isn't a file on you. There's either an accusation or there isn't. What's going on? Is everything corrupted? You know, I'm sorry, but this is getting a little bit pathetic. You know, if it was you or me, they would throw away the key. But this one, for whatever reason, they have a game to play. I just don't get it. I just don't get it.
Maybe you do get it, and that's the whole point.
Well, maybe.
And everybody gets it.
Well, I think everybody does get it. I believe I'm the last one to know, but, you know, it's just amazing. Just
well,
amazing.
One of the things I know you and I are looking forward to next month is the mayor's second State of the City message.
You know, it's so funny that you should mention that, because I was looking forward to hearing it, and once I got notice of it, because it's going to happen next month, I completely forgot about it, because, you know what, it just doesn't seem to be, I don't know what the mayor can say, because...
I you know, that's interesting, because I have the same opinion, and we have not spoken about this, except at this point on the air, and I'm saying, what can they possibly say in the second State of the City that they haven't said in the first State of the City? And here we go into the 15th month next month in March of the administration.
Mm-hmm.
What is it possibly that they think they've done? They've been living off the remains of the previous administration. So where do they think they're going? Have we heard any plans? Have they done anything? What's happened in the last 14 months?
They've done absolutely nothing. But
we're going to talk about the. We're going to talk again about the remains of the last administration and future plans that are envisioned. What's the reality here? I can't wait to hear. I said I couldn't wait to hear the first State of the City. Now I really can't wait to hear the second State of the City. I mean,
well,
this should be truly eye-opening.
Well, you're getting me excited, because maybe there is actually something that you could still say, but I doubt it. So I really doubt if the mayor has anything positive to say other than I didn't know. That's all he can say. I didn't know. I can't resolve this contractual agreement. I didn't know we were paying the electric for this. I didn't know we were giving inducements for that.
Let's flip it to the positive side and say on those things that the statement or speech may take credit for. Whether it's one thing or three things or more things, I would like to know specifically if those things were generated in the last 14 months, because that's what you want to take credit for, not for something that was generated previous to the mayor getting into office and has been in the pipeline for months or years. I mean, we have to talk about, you know, again, the real deal. You know, let's have a reality check here. What have you collectively done, Mr. Mayor, and your staff and the administration and City Hall, in the last 14 months?
Well, I think he's done absolutely nothing. What's interesting is that he will probably show up in March and the State of the City address, and he will tell everybody that now he's been able to fill all the board of directors of all the separate entities of the city, like the Board of Education, the Parking Authority, and now he's going to be able to move forward with his directives. In the meantime, he's accomplished absolutely nothing, but, and you know what, this is the best part? The best part is that Nick Spano will be out of prison, and he will become the de facto mayor, because so far, in 14 months, this man has bungled it up. And you know what? I am so livid, because he promised us so much and he's delivered on nothing. And that's what I don't understand. And every Tom, Dick, and Crook out there is not doing the right thing. Hold on a second, because we got a caller.
Sure.
Good morning, caller. You're on with Rich Narog and Hezzy Harris. Good morning.
Good morning, Hezzy. Barry McGowey from the Yonkers Firefighters Union.
Hey, how are you, Barry?
Good.
Good morning, Barry. How are you?
Good morning, Rich. How you been?
Good, thanks. Yourself?
Good, good. I heard you guys talking about the fire last night at the hotel.
It yes.
A very good understanding of the location there. And I'm just not sure exactly who owns that property, but you may be right. It actually may be city-owned property.
I think that may still be a remnant of that entire parcel that goes from North Broadway down Odell. That still may be in the city's hands and still listed as city-owned property.
Yeah, the entrance is right at the aqueduct there.
Yes, it's that very narrow. I was trying to visualize how a rig would get up and down there, because I knew it was difficult for a small city car to get in there.
No, it's very difficult, and especially with all the snow that we had, there was so much
mud. Oh, right, right. And the turnaround, once you get to that little court area, it makes it even more difficult.
Absolutely, and then what they had a problem was as you said, they have the aerial apparatus spraying water from above. They have a difficult time actually getting the what we call the plates that help the outriggers, which stabilize the ladder. They were all sinking into the mud, and it was very labor-intensive because of the conditions back there.
And you're probably most fortunate because you were isolated and, you know, containment, you know, you didn't have other or certainly wood frame buildings around. And
no,
there
was no exposure problem other than the fact that you were concerned about brush fires.
Was that where the previous fire in Adel was also back in January 12th?
There was another building in there, an all wood building.
Yeah, so that was the first fire, right?
Yes.
And this was now the second one in the same place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the same property, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That was the
You know, at this stage, you're not sure what started the fire. Oftentimes in these abandoned buildings, homeless people go into them to keep themselves warm and to have shelter, and then sometimes they will start a fire. We're not sure if that's what it was or possibly. These things become what they call attractive nuisances to children as well and teenagers.
Exactly.
You know, whenever you have these abandoned buildings, a lot of times kids go in there because kids are kids, and they're into mischief, and next thing you know, someone's lighting the match, and it goes up. So they're not sure at this stage. It shouldn't be electrical because there was no electric or gas to the building. So it most likely was intentionally set somehow or accidentally set, but it was human hands most likely did it.
Yeah, you know, it's sad to say that it did occur, but, you know, when it was part of the active city inventory, you know, these things were looked at on a regular basis, so it was preventive in nature. So if we saw any graffiti, you know, or we saw any windows broken or anything of that nature, it was corrected. So people who might use it, homeless or otherwise, kids at night, would realize people were watching it and stayed away from it. But if no one's paying attention to it, that's when you have the problem. And unfortunately, you did yesterday. And, of course, your men had to go out there and, you know, presents other difficulties.
Yeah, but one of the problems is it creates a lot of extra work because that was a significant period of time where a significant portion of our resources were not available. God forbid there was a fire in your house last night.
Exactly.
We had a hard, you know, most of the firefighters in the city, because it was so labor intensive and they had to stretch all the hand lines in a considerable distance and we had water issues, they were tied up there for hours. And, you know, it's situations like that. If another fire does begin somewhere else, you don't really have the resources to handle that.
Well, I might suggest that somebody look at the property records and see who's the record owner of the property, whether it's the city or someone else, and, you know, begin some investigation from that point so these things don't become a future.
Where would someone do that? Because, you know, the problem is identifying what parcel of property it is, because it's not as if it has a street address. And, you know,
what you can do, and I'll suggest you might do, is go to the law department and ask them to look at the maps they have on the breakup of the property.
Yeah.
And they can probably tell you directly, or not, they can find out for you, you know, how they've, you know, pieced off the properties and what the block and lot is to the property and who the record owner is of the property.
Okay. Now, in your prior life, you actually managed the real estate owned by the city.
I did, exactly. So that's why I'm speaking directly to the issue.
Yeah.
And I remember when the property was taken over in whole and then, you know, began to go first with the school when the piece was given over to the Yonkers Public Schools, which exists on the North Broadway side. And then, of course, it got further subdivided, and as that went along, it left my my jurisdiction, if you will, and my oversight, and went basically to, you know, City Hall and the Law Department and Economic Development, and then it was out of my hands. So,
yeah. Well, one of the things you said before, I know in years past, there was a lot of maintenance on the, you know, the city-owned properties and whatnot. I can just tell you that in the last few years, because of the dire financial circumstances, that not only are the vacant properties not receiving proper care and maintenance, but the active buildings. You know, we've all heard the stories about the state of the school buildings themselves, but I can tell you almost every one of the firehouses throughout the city is in dire need of significant repairs. And unfortunately, you know, going back probably 4 or 5 years under the Amicone administration, a lot of those expenditures were cut, and as a result, you know, this new administration comes in, and there's just nothing in the budget for the repairs. So they have to bond whatever they can, and of course, because of the of the bond costs, they try to keep the bonds as low as possible. But there's significant, problems in most, based upon, we have a lot of experience with the fire department facilities. I can only imagine it's the same way at, in the police department, in public works, in the parks, where...
Yeah. Deferred maintenance to save money was always the easiest cut to make. That always came under the executive branch. And, the mayor as the chief executive, whoever the mayor was at that time, realized that's where you could slice and dice. And, next year, next budget. I'm still waiting to see where the firehouse for Rich Hill is going to be placed and built.
So are we. It's amazing. We just continued. That was, an agreed-upon provision. To remedy some of the impacts on the city. It's one of the reasons why people voted on approving the project. And it was actually during that period of time when Sandy and Abby was involved in the vote. When she voted no the first time, there was no clear commitment from the developer. By the time they had the second vote, that was one of the things that she was able to secure, was $3 million cost contribution from the developer for that firehouse.
And I remember that very clearly because I was out there looking for the benefit of the fire department for a location that would be suitable to do just what you're talking about.
And
so I'm going back now well over 5, maybe 6 years ago.
Yeah. And now we have talk of the other development you guys were discussing before up on the other side of Austin Avenue, which has, very limited access unless they're going to create additional access up by Stu Leonard's. The only other access is Austin Avenue, which is all.
And Austin Avenue is too winding and can't take more than a milk truck if you went up there.
Exactly.
So the best way and the only way is to come straight up, the Stu Leonard drive there and go straight back towards Austin Avenue, where apparently Targets would be located.
And we all know what the traffic is like there, existing traffic already out there. Any time around the holiday, it's just a disaster. Whoever planned the ingress and egress is there probably didn't have a traffic engineering degree. every time
you're being kind.
I go to Home Depot on a Saturday afternoon.
Right.
And it's a disaster. Never mind at Thanksgiving, Easter, around the holidays.
Oh, forget it. It's impossible. I mean, just the thought that you have to come out of Costco, make the right, go halfway up the hill to make a quick sharp left for the traffic coming out of Stu Leonard's trying to get out to go down the hill.
Oh, and then to make matters
worse. Never mind inclement weather and icy roads.
Yeah, to make matters worse, that they have those hedges planted there, which it makes it a blind turn. I've never understood that one. As you make that U-turn.
Yes, it's hard to argue with the brilliance, really. Sometimes
it
just shines in your eyes and it blinds you. Well,
so, yeah.
Well, I hope that you listened early enough on a stronger positive note with the Bonefish Grill.
Yes. Rich Hill, is successful
mm-hmm.
as far as bringing people in up there. I don't know how successful it's been in living up to all the promises it made as far as revenues go.
Oh, that's a whole other story. That's why I simply singled out my experience with Bonefish Grill and encouraged people to go have a great meal with great staffing there.
Oh, absolutely. And the Yard House, Cheesecake Factory, Sephora.
Oh, you have Brio's. You have so many other places,
Yeah.
No, like it or not, you can only eat and talk about the recent experience.
Right. And the vast majority of the people that actually go to Rich Hill aren't from Yonkers. And it'd be nice if the revenue stream that was promised was going to, be able to provide for the services that are necessary for that.
Well, we all await that information, and we all await those wonderful revenue streams and the millions of dollars they're always talking about that are supposed to come online. We don't know in whose and what lifetime that's supposed to happen.
Well, the project is, for all intents and purposes, almost complete. With the exception of a few more residential towers and a few more stores, so there should be the revenue coming in. And
actually, I spoke to the mayor on radio over a month ago, and he was supposed to. I thought that the figures had come out on the county level, but he said they didn't come out yet in the Yonkers area, and they couldn't figure out how much was coming from Rich Hill. But he promised the figures, but they haven't come, which means they're not very good.
Right. Well, you'd imagine. They must have some figures from some period. The facility has been open in one way or another for over 2 years now.
Correct.
So it's not as if, they just opened up last week, so there should be some type of financial records from the state as far as the remission of those sales taxes, as well as the city knows how much money is coming in the pilots. Unfortunately, they sold out the lease 4 or 5 years ago. I remember we were supposed to get, it was an 80-year lease or something, and, there was going to be $1 million per year for the purchase of that property, and then they sold it out for like $10 or $12 million a few years ago. So we lost that recurring revenue stream. It's just disheartening that we keep talking about more development, and all these developers come in, promise the world all these revenue streams, and it's going to justify all these tax breaks and abatements, and then when it's all completed, there's really no money coming in. And the poor homeowner, including me, has to...
And me.
Yeah, right. The homeowner is every year after year getting beat over the head. So, taxes going up, services going down, and we have all this development, which really is not enriching our the city's fisc, which should be the goal.
It's amazing. If you want to find what you pay on your property, my property, anybody else's property, you can go to the tax rolls and find that out. If you want to find out what's happening at Ridge Hill or Roston Avenue or the waterfront, you can't find a thing out. Everything's delayed, and it's as murky and as cloudy as the dirty pond.
Right.
Amazing, isn't it?
But
the promise is galore out there. It's coming. It's coming.
You get a nice artist rendering and put together a few spreadsheets and make all the promises you want. And no one ever follows up on it. It's kind of like the firehouse of Ridge Hill. We've had communications. The city council was and remains the lead agency for the development of Ridge Hill. We did send written communications to the city council over the last couple of years requesting that they follow up on this. And unfortunately, they've basically washed their hands of it and left it up to Mayor Amicone, and now, Mayor Spano comes in, and he has to deal with the issue. But the city council, as the lead agency, made certain conditions precedent for this development of the project, and one of them was the firehouse.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's been done, and no action has been taken by the city council. Then there's also other issues, and, we only look at on the fire department side, but, there was supposed to be water runoff issues. And we know that St. Mary's Cemetery across the thruway has flooded twice in the last 3 years. There was supposed to be provisions to maintain certain nighttime light to shield the residents from nighttime light. There's certain neighborhoods in Yonkers, if you go out at 10 o'clock at night, it's like they're living next to Shea Stadium with all the lights that are emitting from the Ridge Hill complex. Now, I don't know if the community groups follow up on it, or if the people that had the objections and concerns, 10 years ago are still around, but it looks like a lot of the mediation measures were never followed up on. And, we're here looking at the fire department aspect, but I'm sure there's numerous other impacts that haven't been mitigated as well that were promised they would be mitigated. And probably the most troubling part of it is the fact, the biggest benefit of this project was supposed to be the revenues, and it doesn't seem like the information regarding the revenues is forthcoming.
No.
You have to ask, why are we here still asking these questions after so many years when the people we elect to handle these problems don't seem to have a handle on them, don't even want to acknowledge them? These are the people who are in charge of watching this for us, for our benefit.
Well, I've been to several city council meetings and real estate committee meetings and raised these concerns over the last several years. And they look at you like they've never heard of Ridge Hill. They've never heard of the approval process and the promises that were made. And they're more interested in renaming some dead-end street after some, poor soul that passed away.
There you go. And that's the easiest way to go, the nice photo op, nice bun and crumpets, and, off we go. Why get into anything that takes some real thought?
And then when the revenue is not there to pay the bills, everybody wants to turn around and blame the hardworking men and women that work for this city. The cops, the firefighters, the teachers, the garbage men, it's all their fault. But, unfortunately, the city's wealth has been given away to developers. I mean, you look at all this you look down at the waterfront, the millions and millions of dollars of assistance they get, whether it's brownfield reclamation funds, tax credit here, and, you know, they're in empire zones, and they're in every
enterprise zones, empire zones. Right. They got every zone you could think of, and it's still continuing as,
right.
as you move farther north, north of Glenwood. They want to take parkland.
Right.
Unbelievable.
And then the Industrial Development Agency is going to come in and give them every other break they can. You know, I go to Home Depot and buy $1,000 worth of, you know, bricks for my backyard. I pay.
You get a sales tax exemption.
Right.
Oh.
I mean, there's exemptions on everything for these developers, and then they turn around and they don't want to pay their fair share of their taxes, so they enter into the pilots.
That's right.
And then we see that many of the deals that were made, you know, they haven't lived up to their obligations under their existing deals.
Mm-hmm, because they find it's easier to fight through their lawyers and delay this on for years.
Yeah.
And they come out ahead of the game. I mean, and it is a game.
Well, I commend you guys because, I mean, Hezzy is one of the only journalists that we have in the city of Yonkers that actually looks into some of these things. You know, we don't, the journal news is almost non-existent. News 12, you know, wants to focus on the grand opening of Legoland. And, you know, they get a cute picture. But there's no investigative journalism. There's nobody looking to see, you know, what's happening out there, following up. And it's unfortunate. And the city seems to be, you know, falling deeper and deeper into financial chaos.
Well, we'll have to continue to hold, as they say, hold high the torch of learning here so we can light up the way for others that they may see, and eventually we may have some results at the end of the road. At least we want to be positive about all this, and I certainly appreciate your input and the fact that you're doing what you're doing and can offer some historical background as well as professional experience on these issues. So that's always welcome, and we thank you for your comments as well.
Okay.
Thanks.
Guys, keep up your great work, and I always enjoy listening to you.
Thank you very much, and nice talking with you, Barry.
Okay, take care now.
Yeah,
thank
bye-bye.
You.
Bye-bye now.
Thanks, Barry McGoey. He's the president of Local 628 of the International Association of Firefighters in the city of Yonkers, which is terrific.
Well, I'm going to also say adios until next week. I mean, that's a very positive note to go out on with the Barry's contribution to the conversation and his history and knowledge of the city of Yonkers and, you know, the facts. And it's just nice to have these intelligent conversations, which should be had more often with more people in decision-making positions who are willing to listen and to act and go forth. And I think we'll leave it at that for now until next week, and I'm sure there'll be more because there's always more, but always a pleasure to be and speak with you, Hezzy, my co-host. And to our listeners who take the time to listen either in live or by archive later on. And thank you to Barry McGoey, the president of Yonkers Firefighters, for not only listening in and being a faithful listener, but contributing with his phone call. So thanks again, Hezzy, and goodbye to all until next week, which will be March.
Yeah,
so happy March.
Happy March. But before you go, I got to ask you, would you want to consider talking about the next week, the public-private partnership, because evidently we're incorporating it now into other development. We haven't done it yet on education, and I'm getting a little scared about it because I really don't understand what they're doing, and everything is bypassing the city council. Everything is going through the planning board, zoning boards. You know, it's like it's.
I would be happy to follow up with that with you next week, sure.
Okay, that'll be cool.
All right.
Enjoy the afternoon. Thank you very much.
Enjoy, and then thanks to everyone for listening again. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thank you, sir. Well, that's Richard Narog, and so we have that going on. That'll be really good because I thought I understood what was going on with the development utilizing the public-private partnership concepts, but still don't fully comprehend its complexity. And there's just too much to know, and unfortunately, just don't have the expertise. Certainly with Richard Narog's input, that should make life a little bit easier because of his knowledge and his knowledge base. So that really will be cool. Well, let's just see what else is going on here. I'm going to quickly look and see what else is happening here. Oh, that's the other thing. You probably read about this. It turns out that There were the Inspector General's report came out last week with regard to an event that took place in November of last year with regard to Hurricane Sandy. So she looked into some issues that came up. You'll be able to read that on the website. We'll find out what happens to Mr. Hines today because he's expected to be arraigned. The Warburton Garage, which opened last week, $14 million ribbon cutting event that happened on Friday. But this is like unbelievable. It's a private-public partnership, $3.8 million in tax-exempt bonds, $4 million in municipal grants, $2.7 million in taxable mortgage, and $3.5 million in new markets tax credits. It just goes on and on, except there's little explanation other than throwing out a lot of numbers there and what that means. But at the same time, Mr. Cotter, who still owes us $4.1 million, is engaged in this little process too. So you got to wonder what's going on here. I'm not quite sure what it is, but it's better to ask the questions. Also, it looks like in the case of Zahi Jaris, he's going to present himself to prison on Monday. And Sandy Anabi was also, she's should be doing the same thing on Monday. I don't know where they're going to be held. And so we'll see what happens there. And, you know, I hear pretty soon we're going to be having, Nick Spano, who was in prison for a while. I thought he was going to be released sometime in March, but then it was the end of March, then it was the beginning of March. He'll probably be coming out a lot sooner than we expect. So I have an inclination that he'll be coming out very, very soon. We'll see how he will impact the whole demeanor of City Hall, and we'll see where that goes. So that's going to be very interesting. And we'll see if there are any ramifications to the whole issue with Mr. Berardo. We'll see if there are any other issues with regard to, you know, we're really tracking a couple of cases as well where there are people who are into drugs and into alcoholism who are permitted to continue their behavior pattern without any stopping or any program that we can put these people into. And they're driving city vehicles, and God forbid they kill themselves, but even more importantly, God forbid they kill anyone else while they're intoxicated or inebriated or high on some sort of drug. And the bottom line is the city is up you know what without a paddle, and that becomes a real problem. It's been going on for years, and I had visited these cases maybe 3 years ago. I actually reflected on some of them, and I hear to this day they're still continuing. What a disaster. What a shame. 2 or 3 years under Amicone, 14 months now under Mike Spano. This is getting a little bit pathetic. And you know what? I think one of the problems in setting things straight in this city is that there is such an adversarial situation that is created somehow with those people that are elected into office and the people who work at City Hall who just want to be left alone so they could do their job and be recognized for doing a good job, and if they're not doing a good job, being assisted to do a better job than they are able to do or thought they were able to do, just literally raise the expectation level from everybody and teach them what they need to know in order to do a better job, and stop with all the patronage that keeps on going and the abuse that happens because you're protected by knowing this one or that one. That friends and family system is evidently eviscerating the concern and the interest and the drive of people to do the job they want to do. Because let me put it to you this way, it really boils down to only one thing, and that is people want to do the best they possibly can. They wake up in the morning, go to work, and they go to City Hall. They want to do the best they can, but then they get corrupted by the system somehow, and they're marginalized, kicked to the curb. There are no regulations. Regulations have to be set up. It's amazing that for a city that is so old, that we are still at that point of infancy where we don't have standards by which to judge our own conduct and to judge others by that same measure. It really must be thrown onto the back of the only individual that can oversee it, and that is Inspector General. So she's got the legal expertise, she's got the empathy, and she's got the mind for it. However, that's so much work. It should be thrown onto the back of the ethics board. Let them start to engage in a process of defining and deciphering what standards need to be met through an ethical compass. You know, quite often I may or may not agree with people from the political perspective, from an intellectual perspective, from a historical perspective. But at the end of the day, the only thing that really matters and the only way you can build trust is if you trust that individual to do the right thing and conform to the ethics that they espouse. If you believe in their ethical stance, then you can believe that what they say is of value. And you can then argue the issue, even if at the end of the argument you don't agree. At least there will be the respect that will continue to be residual in its effect over time. And yet you could still therefore respect the individual and even their perspective and their vote, should they have a vote in a particular venue. So this is what's so important. We've got to get over the debauched area where we now reside, which is all an environment that was created for the public by none other than the atrocious conduct of the leadership that we've elected into office. And we didn't elect these people who would become the ogres of our society at the top of the heap, but rather they were the ones that became different than what they told us they were. And like, how are we supposed to know? We don't sleep with these people. We don't know who they really are. But the point is, they tell us one thing. Are we not to believe any word that they say? Are we supposed to dismiss them all because they all lie? Well, they don't all lie, but what is it about the office that seems to corrupt people? What is the problem here? You would think these people had no backbone and are incapable of conducting their tutelage over of a city with kindness, with benevolence, with thought, and with empathy. What's the problem here? What is going wrong? Is there something in the water that we drink that creates a sense of, I don't want to look and I don't want to bother and I don't care and who cares who gets hurt in the process? This has got to stop. Why are we hurting ourselves? You know, you would think this is such elementary stuff. You know, this has got to stop. And it's so interesting because I hear from City Hall, they don't want any bad news about Yonkers because that'll give people a sense of that everything is going along great. No, it's not. And people are not that stupid. You could spin all you want. But you know what? It takes one call to somebody in Yonkers. You ask them what it is. And if you know them and they know you, they'll share all the juicy stuff. And it's not always so nice. But then again, it's not nice anywhere. So the purpose of it all is to deal with the concerns as they are. Deal with the concerns as an adult. Deal with the concern as a government concerned about cleaning up the mess. And you know what? Once you start cleaning up the mess, it really gets better. What would you like Yonkers to do? Would you like it to be in the good old days where everybody got stopped when they got off a highway and a hand was put out and people expected to get money for messing up your windshield because they cleaned it up with a dirty rag and yet they still expected to get paid And eventually, when people got sick and disgusted with that sort of behavior, they didn't roll down the windows, and they would be cursing going on, and it was a quality of life that turned upside down. And the only way you dealt with it is when the mayor, at that time was Mayor Giuliani, turned the place around and said, hey, these are the issues, these are the concerns, this is how I'm going to remedy it, and that's what ended up working. And isn't that special? That's the way it works in everything. You may not have agreed with Giuliani, no problem. But his conduct was appropriate, wasn't it? You may not have approved of his politics, but in that particular situation, it worked because it brought a sense of purpose where people could no longer be, burdened by this part of their life. So they were able to move on, and that's no longer a problem. So these are the sort of situations that have to be dealt with. You can't have cover-up in the hope that it will take care of everything. It doesn't take care of anything. There needs to be a sense of purpose, a sense of drive, and a sense of expectation by a government and its people. And I believe that in Yonkers, we've got it. It's just that we've hurt our own people for so long that it gets to the point where you wonder, like, how can these people survive this stuff? Because they're getting beaten up every day, you know, deflected from one situation to the other. And people still believe that the Aldel Bellows of the world are doing the right thing by the city. They're not. They're doing right by them. They're making a fortune of money. In the meantime, the city suffers. Economic development, the way we hand it out to the people that come into the city where they expect us to pay their way, is outrageous. The fact that we hide the fact that we have one developer picking up every straggling piece of property and that he will develop it. The question, how will he develop it? When will he develop it? Does he have the financial wherewithal to develop it? And what's the guarantee that he will complete the project once he's afforded the ability to be the developer of that particular project? Where is the responsibility on the part of the developer other than simply accept money that was handed to him or her by the taxpayer? Where does this work? How does it work? And why is it defined and delineated in contracts? And I know we'll always hear the same old thing. We have to go into executive session. We have to exclude the public. We have to exclude the media. We can't discuss it because money is mentioned here. You know what? Just black out the money amounts and let's work on the rest of the issue and see if whatever the figure is, the public is protected from the failings of the developer to do whatever they need to do. It's the way it's done in many sophisticated countries. It's time Yonkers caught up to the gig and to the game as it's being played on the highest level. Because we don't need to be in the backwoods because our government is deficient in any way, shape, or form. It's time we gravitated to the top of the heap rather than be at the bottom because that's what we're doing. We're allowing developers to dictate our destiny, and we have nothing and no skin in the game in the destiny other than to pay, only to pay. And, you know, is there any money left over to pay any of these things? That's the question. So that's the situation here. It looks like I know that I'm having some difficulty with the internet today. I'm going to just check and see if I can access some of the sites that I wanted to access with you. Seems to be taking quite a bit of time. We'll see if this comes through, and if it does, we'll be able to continue. Otherwise, may end up cutting the program short only because I can't access the information that I require in order to be able to conduct the balance of the show. So let's just see for another moment or so. And if not, we'll welcome you to tomorrow's show. Tomorrow's Wednesday. I don't have anyone planned at the moment. I'm really thrilled, and we're only going to be talking about the Office of the Department of Public Works. We're not going to get into the politics or the fact that one individual is suspended for a week or that another person left their position. That's of no interest with regard to our discussion with Commissioner Tommy Mayer. And the reason for that is because we want to really celebrate the department. And I think that's really quite exciting to be able to learn exactly what the department does. From my perspective, I see them as literally the foundation by which the rest of the city can function. And it seems like we always consider the people who are engaged in garbage collection as the lowliest of the low. But let's face it, folks, it is one of the most important jobs in the city, because if you can't clean up the mess that we all produce, then the bottom line is all you're going to do is get disease, and you're going to get a stench, and you can't keep the place clean and running if you have refuse piling up in front of everybody's home or everybody's apartment building or all the hospitals and this, that, or the other. They keep it clean so that we can function on every other level. Without having a clean environment, which the DPW crews provide, we couldn't function. They've got service crews to keep the trucks functioning and up to date. And they actually, because cut have had their toll in the department as well, they have to exceed almost the life of a lot of this equipment that is old and tired and breaking down. And they seem to patch it back together again somehow or some way, and they maintain the life of equipment that should have been surrendered or sold or trashed after a certain amount of mileage. And yet I'm shocked to know and to learn that there's police vehicles with 300,000 miles on the odometer, and I think they're supposed to trash these things after 150,000 miles. It gets also to be extremely expensive just to maintain this equipment. So, you know, what can I tell you? There's so many things involved. Also, even maintaining the infrastructure, such as pipe break and burst and the costs involved in cleanup. There's so many issues, and yet they're demanded to do all this, and these are unbelievably gargantuan tasks that only they can do. So, you know, we shouldn't be so flippant when it comes to appreciating the department and what it does. Of course, there are all sorts of other political impositions on these departments. That whole friend and family network might be involved in it as well. Hey, that's for another day. And that's, you know, we're digging for trash, excuse the pun. We're looking to see and celebrate what these people do under extremely difficult times that burdened them because of the fiscal issues, that burdened them because, well, it's all fiscal issues. Everything is brought about because of the fiscal concerns. If we had more money, our infrastructure could be kept up to date. Same thing with equipment. Also getting better, more efficient equipment. Also teaching the people who work in the department greater skills in order to maintain the equipment in a better way. There are just so many things that could be done. However, the modality of function from a fiscal perspective evidently hasn't come about in a city like Yonkers. Maybe we're too small for that. I don't know exactly where it has been brought to the top echelon of success. Hey, Manhattan, between, I guess, what would you say, from the Battery all the way up to maybe 96th Street, functioning at the highest levels, but then north of that, it's not working as well. Brooklyn is going through a resurgence, but it's not at its maximum. Queens is also functioning, but not at its best. Same thing with Staten Island and the Bronx. All these places are actually feeding on one another, and Yonkers is hoping to catch some of that same fever, but hasn't caught up here. You've got different situations in every city. Mount Vernon is still inundated with whatever goes on in their politics and whatever happens in their corrupt world, and also the police and all kinds of issues there, every turn to look. So it's very hard to find cities. There might be small villages here and there that are able to better manage their money, are better able to stick their hand into a cookie jar that has been left there on the side for emergencies, and it functions there. But it's not always functioning very well in a lot of different places. So we have to be thankful to some extent, but extremely critical on another level, because things are just not working out as they should. And there's a problem here, and that problem is no good. Anyway, it looks to me as though we're not able to function or pick up some extra pages, which I required in order to be able to conduct the balance of the show. So thankfully, we were able to conduct the show with Richard Narod, a wonderful guest that called in unexpectedly, Barry McGoey, president of the of Local 628, the International Association of Firefighters. So thank you. And, of course, we should say thank you to Adelma and Jamie, who brought about our fan club. They were the ones that initiated it, so we thank them, as we're honored by their even considering to put that together for us. So how wonderful. So thanks again for your joining us today, and we'll speak to you tomorrow. And that's a bit. Have a great day. Be careful. Bye.